Hey everybody, welcome back to Yankees and Gravy. Welcome to the second official podcast episode. Glad you could join us. Unlike the first one where everything got a little mushy, got a little, I guess, introspective about my history as a Yankee fan, the purpose for that was to hopefully kind of give you, just for the first one, give you a little bit of basis of where I come from as a Yankee fan. Quote unquote, my Yankee street cred, I guess. But like I said, I would like to kind of stay more current. We're always going to delve into the old stuff and, you know, some historical stuff. Because, you know, when you're a kid, that's when baseball is most important to you and actually should be most important to you. But when it's as important to you as it was for me as a kid, it's never going to go away. So that's where the podcast is coming from. I'm just trying to touch on the new, touch on the old, connect it all, trying to be a little bit of an idiot, a little bit of a smartass, a little bit of everything, just to kind of recap what the whole description of the podcast across the board would be. So jumping into tonight, I'll say, weird game. Sunday Night Baseball, ESPN, John Kruk sitting his fat ass on top of the Green Monster. It's kind of funny having them up there. I don't know why they put them up there. They obviously can't see the game other than the TV for purposes of being able to kind of, you know, call stuff and get a real perspective on the ins and the outs of the stuff. But John Kruk gets under my skin a little bit too. We'll get into that in a little bit, a little later. So it seems like both starting pitchers just didn't want to take control of this game. You had Phelps, who unfortunately left with an injury, inflammation in his elbow. Who knows how serious that is? If it's going to be along the lines of our regular luck, it's going to be real serious, because that'll be the fifth starting pitcher that will miss extended periods of time if that in fact ends up happening. But let's cross our fingers, hope for the best. Or maybe not, because I don't know if you were watching him tonight. I could tell you right now, from the very first inning, even when he was getting people out, you could see how much he was just not getting on top of the ball. Those pitches were hangers, almost all of them. They were up in the zone, and it was just going to be a matter of an inning or two until they started figuring him out. He was just hanging a bunch of stuff. And then if you watch his motion, I'm not trying to act like Joe pitching coach jerk off over here, but you can watch his pitching motion, and he really wasn't bending. It may have had something to do with the injury. I don't know what it was. Maybe he was tired. But you could tell the follow-through wasn't there. He wasn't getting on top of the ball. He wasn't bending. He wasn't finishing off his pitch with that, you know, in that real down-low crouch position like he really kind of should. And when you did see him do it a couple of times, you saw he did get a good pull on that on his breaking pitches. He was getting them down low. But for the most part, he was hanging mostly everything. You're not going to say out of laziness, he's a professional pitcher. Pretty high character guy from what you hear. So like I said, hopefully he's okay. Hopefully someone kind of saw that he's just not getting the right bend that he's supposed to have, not following through. Balls left chest high, waist high, and I don't care. Red Sox have an anemic offense, but they are professional baseball players, professional hitters, and they're going to bang them off that wall, bang them over the wall, and they're going to be productive. Buchholz was not much better. He was seemingly attempting to keep us in the game. Every time you got the 3-0 lead that happened first, then they tied it up. Then he went up 7-4, and then we caught up to him again. Watching John Kruk, listen to John Kruk. It's a little annoying, you know, you're watching these national announcers. I'm not a big Michael Kay fan, but you can't deny it. Michael Kay knows the freaking Yankees, you know what I mean? Michael Kay knows the Yankees, and of course the guys he's got in the booth with him, O'Neill, David Cohn, Singleton, all those guys, they're good announcers. They're a fun listen when it comes to the guys in the YES Network. Kruk just seems like he's just all over the place, to be honest with you. One time he was, you know, they had the lead 7-4. The Red Sox had the lead, and Buchholz didn't have his stuff tonight, and he's walking people left and right. Kruk makes the comment, you know, I'll tell you what, right now, if I'm playing first base, this guy's basically, I'm paraphrasing, but his ear's going to be bleeding. I can't even say the stuff I'd be saying to him on national TV about, you know, throwing strikes and stop screwing around with these guys. You got a 3-run lead. I'm standing out here bored because you're walking everybody left and right. When we got a 3-0 lead, you got to go after him. You got to challenge people. You got to get it. You got to get after him. I don't know if Buchholz hurt him or not, but okay, great. Sounds good, Kruk. Two innings later, He starts grooving him, throwing him in there, kind of trying to challenge people, putting it over the plate. And then we just started banging him. We just started hitting him hard, you know, Steven Drew, everybody. Even McCann got in on it tonight, which we'll touch on him in a little while too. But so what does Crux say after that? All right, well, listen, what are you doing here? You can't just – these are professional hitters. You can't just throw it over the plate. So I think Kruk is – he's pretty entertaining, but as far as credibility, I mean, it seems like he's just very whimsical. He's just going to blurt out whatever's on his mind at that particular point, not giving a crap if there's any consistency with any other ideas that he's put forth before or after. So I don't even know what's the name of the other guy that's in the booth with him, the bald guy. He's pretty good. He's a pretty good play-by-play guy. But, yeah, it's always, you know, if you're a Yankee fan, it's always annoying to to listen to those national announcers, because they clearly don't know the team as much as the Yankee broadcasters, but maybe even as much as most of the Yankee fans that are listening and forced to hear. I mean, to be honest with you, I used to turn on the radio with Sterling. I think that's actually finally got to the point where that's unlistenable. I mean, almost so unlistenable it's listenable because it's entertaining, but I think our buddy John has kind of lost it. And then throw Susan in there. Like I said, if you ever listen to Boomer and Carton, or they have a blast with those two, and rightly so. I mean, they are just, I mean, they're clowns, and I got to think they know it. You know what I mean? They're out there singing songs, screaming these calls, and Susan with the voice and the, I'm not even going to try to do it, but it's they have to know by now that they're just clowns. But either way, pulled out tonight's game. That's 2 out of 3. Let's talk about the current state of the team. Honestly, a lot of moves were made for the trade deadline all around baseball. Some big moves. Seemed like the pitchers were the main story, the main, you know. But what did the Yankees do? So the Yankees, I guess that's what everybody's talking about. Cashman's getting a lot of credit for methodically, piece by piece, upgrading each position little by little. And I guess that's exactly what he's done. I think in all areas, he has done that. He's put some decent pitches. You got to admit, him and Girardi have done a good job with the pitching. They've definitely pieced together a pitching staff. I mean, depending on what happens with Phelps, hopefully he's okay. But if you're going to say you're going to lose 5 of your starting pitchers, where do you think you're going to be this year? It's a mess. So they found enough pieces to kind of hold off. Listen, what are you going to do? You're gonna hold your breath on Tanaka? I'm not counting on him. How many times have we seen this? I don't get it, because you know everybody says the knee-jerk response is he should have just got the surgery, he should have just got it done. And that makes sense, because historically that seems to be the direction it has gone. But if the freaking doctors are saying that it's a partial tear and he may not need it, who the hell are we, no matter how many times we've seen this happen, who the hell are we to use our naked eye or our inexperienced sense of judgment to be like, nah, they're wrong, they should shut him down? Who knows? He's going to start throwing in a couple of days, it sounds like. Pineda, same thing though, man. You know, you can't really... When is Pineda going to put together a stretch where we can rely on him? We lost out on him for the first 2 years. We lost out on him for the last, whatever, 2-3 months, whatever it's been. This guy, I don't want to use the P word, Pavano. We're going to have to try to gear up for next year. To me, he's got that. If he hits the shelf this year and can't pitch for the rest of the year, I'm not going to be shocked. And to me, I'll take one more chance at him. Rests up, comes back next year. Maybe he gives us, you know, 30 or so starts. If he gets hurt next year again within the first couple of games, then this guy's useless to us. He's just, you know, and now, no offense to him, I love the way he pitched. He came back and pitched better than I thought you'd see him pitch. But the reality is, the truth is the truth, and he's useless to us. If he gets hurt again next year, it's not going to happen. I'll give him a comeback, setback, failed attempt this year, and that's fine. Gear up for next year. If he gets hurt again next year, he is Pavano Part 2. So that's what we got. Looking at the team right now, what do you got? You got an average team, any way you look at it. What you have right now, if you want to be positive, is a fighter's chance. You're not as good as Baltimore right now on paper. You're definitely not as good as Oakland. You're not as good as Detroit. But you have a solid, solid team. You know what I mean? I would say a slightly above average team that's playing in a very, very mediocre division. So you have a fighter's chance. A couple of pitchers get hot. Who knows? Something worth rooting for, hopefully, into October. But if you're going to take a step back and analyze the team, let's think about this. Brett Gardner is your best player, okay? Is that debatable right now? He's been the best player on the team. Yeah, Beltran has heated up. What is that? That stat he had, 6 games in a row with multiple hit games. That's impressive. So he's hot right now, and I'll take that because we need it. Teixeira has been our thumper. He's been hurt, but for the most part for the season, he's been our thumper, and he's a shell of what he was, and he's a shell of what these other teams have that we're going against. Brett Gardner is leading your baseball team in batting average, and he's not even hitting .280. Okay? He's second. I don't know, is he second? Or he's close to second with, I think, 14 home runs now. And that's it. That's your team, guys. You got to be happy with where they are. This is kind of like another testament as to how good of a job Joe Girardi is doing. I got a bunch of problems with Joe Girardi, and I cringe half the time when I see him making his moves in the bullpen. And you know what happens usually? Yep, he ends up being right. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'm used to the whole Joe Torre, used to it because he's been gone for 10 years, but the whole Joe Torre thing of just kind of like riding people out. Girardi seems to know what he's doing with that stupid binder that he's got there. He seems to know what he's doing. So I'm not really going to doubt Joe anymore. He's a good guy, a good leader. You know, he gets cranky at the end of the year. He gets tired at the end of the year. Really starts snapping at the media. But all in all, I got my faith in Joe Girardi. But as far as this year goes, the most we can hope for, like I said, I'll be honest with you, last year was one of my favorite years to watch because you knew how all the other years were going to end. They were going to either win the division or get a wild card guaranteed in the playoffs and then play either Texas or Detroit and freeze up and choke. Because you had Teixeira, you had Swisher, you had A-Rod, you had those three guys clogging up the lineup in the middle, and none of them wanted to freaking step up in a big spot. They were all scared of the moment. Teixeira's still in the mix, but we have some new blood in there. You know Beltran's not scared. You know Gardner's not scared. You don't think Ellsbury's scared. McCann, again, we're going to talk about McCann. Let's talk about the captain, Derek Jeter. By the way, I hope he's okay. They didn't really bring it up much, but he looked like he may have been a little bit of pain after that. After he hustled to first base, which is another thing too. If you guys noticed, and okay, you heard Crux say it too. Shows he still has no clue. Derek Jeter is not hustling this year. He's not running out ground balls. He's not trying to break up double plays. He is not putting his body in harm's way. And that is very, very, very un-Derek Jeter-like. And I'm here to tell you that I don't freaking blame him. You know what I mean? He's basically 40 years old. He's done everything you could possibly do in this league. He's got 5 rings. And this is his farewell tour. He's a different guy this year. If you're watching him, he's having a blast out there. He's fucking with people. He's making jokes, whether it's our team or the other team. He's ingratiating everybody. He's socializing on the base paths. He's socializing when he comes up to the plate, you know, with the catchers. He's always got a smile on his face. You kind of like it. You know, you don't like it. You know, that's like you like that when you're Nick Swisher because that's who Swisher is. And that's probably who Jeter is down deep down. But you know, for the last, 18 years, he's just been a focused assassin on the baseball field. Hustles out everything, runs out everything, sets the example, doesn't give the media that much. You know, looks like he's almost in pain on the field because he wants to win so bad. It's a different Derek Jeter now, and I'm wondering what the reason is for that. It's got to be self-preservation, but where's that coming from? Is he saying to himself, you know what? I'm going to enjoy this year. I'm going to go out and, because like it or not, he's fragile. Last year was, as he says, a nightmare year. And he had these big long rehabs. He'd come back. He'd get hurt again. Shut it down. Couldn't play. The guy was old. He couldn't do it. He knows he's old now. And I'm wondering, do you think he's just saying, I want to win, but I already got 5. Should I really just enjoy this? Should I enjoy that? He doesn't want to run out every ground ball. Last thing this guy wants to do is pull a hamstring or roll the ankle on a ground ball to second base. And I get that. But I'm also thinking maybe it's something bigger as well. Are either Major League Baseball or the Yankees kind of having a hand in that? Are they asking that? Of course they can't make him. Of course they're not demanding that he does that, or there's some big conspiracy. But I wonder if he did get a call from somebody, you know, in the Major League Baseball's office. It is Selig's last year. It is Jeter's last year. They're going out together. I wonder if somebody said, hey, Derek, how about we take it easy and make sure we finish this year off? Which I don't have a problem with. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with this guy who's done all he's done, going out and enjoying the ride going out. But I am a little surprised. I'll give that to you. I didn't see Jeter really having that in him. I thought Jeter only knew one way, all out, every time. And I thought Jeter's only mission when he puts that glove on and those cleats on is to get to the postseason. I don't know. Going back to the whole team as a whole, I'm saying I don't know like an idiot six times in a row, but I'm trying to, like I said, not a professional. I'm trying to organize my thoughts. It seems to me what I'm trying to say is that there's a different vibe around the Yankees. I even remember when I was in my early 30s with the Yankees, when, you know, there was an excitement. There was a tension in the air. You knew October baseball was coming. You know, it's we're in August right now. You'd start feeling it right now. You just don't feel it with these guys. Am I out of line? Tell me if I'm wrong. But you just don't feel that this is a team that's, you know, obsessed with October and, you know, a team of heroes and legends and, you know, mystique and aura. You don't. Who's the personality in this team? You got Jeter, who's obviously the captain and the leader, but he's having a blast and having a ball, enjoying it. Gardner's playing gritty and hard, but Gardner should be a role player. Gardner should be a good fit, a key piece to a good solid team. But he's the best player on your team. You got a lot of weird shit going on, top to bottom. Let's go through it. Jeter's head is. You know, Jeter's already semi-retired. I'm sorry. A lot of you might not believe me on that. Watch him play. He's already semi-retired. Gardner is doing Gardner. This is the best Gardner you're going to see, and he's doing very, very well. But he should be, you know, either, you know, decent leadoff or two-hitter or a seven or an eight-hitter. He should not be the best player on your team. Now let's get to the disappointments. Is Jacoby Ellsbury playing bad baseball? Absolutely not. But don't even think about telling me that this guy's earning his money right now. Granted, he's not hurt. That was my biggest concern with him. He seems to have a future, a history of getting hurt. And he seems to be playing well, playing hard, and not getting hurt. So you got to give him that. But it was always supposed to be that, you know, when he came here, it was like, oh, Gardner's going to be good because he's like a poor man's Ellsbury. It's turning out to be the opposite of that. Ellsbury is a poor man's Gardner. And he's not getting paid what he should be getting paid. Take Jacoby Ellsbury off this team. Put Robinson Cano on the team. Couple extra million dollars. Totally worth it. You would take that in a heartbeat. No question about it. So that didn't really work out. McCann is the big one. I mean, this guy, I was excited for him. Now, I didn't know if he was going to hit 35 home runs and 100 RBIs, but I figured we were going to get, you know, 20 to 25 home runs, you know, a solid 80 RBIs, a 260, 270 batting average, and some personality, like a fiery guy. You know what I mean? A guy who's going to get in there, cause some trouble, give some intensity to the team. We got no intensity, guys. We got nothing. We have nobody out there that, like, you know what, who's your favorite Yankee right now? There's nobody. It's a bunch of ordinary guys. That's all I could say. We had an extraordinary guy. That was Tanaka. Hopefully he's going to come back. That's what I'm hoping. But that's it. That's not enough. So he's going to come out and he's going to win every fifth day. You still have an average baseball. Okay, there's another extraordinary guy. Betances. That guy is the real deal. He's got to be the closer. I don't know what the contract stuff is going on with Gardner. Robertson. Seems like they're not even talking. He's obviously got to get some money next year because he's a money closer. But even tonight, you could see, you know, there was, what do you want to say? He made it a little interesting. Whereas Betances comes in there and it's lights out. You're dealing with 96 all over again, where you got the setup guy better than the closer. And that was Mariano and Wetland back then. Betances seems every bit as dominant. You know, is he ever going to be Mariano Rivera? I highly doubt it. But at this stage, the guy's throwing 101 miles per hour. The guy throws, I mean, anytime you see somebody watch him pitch, even these new guys, you know, that's the one thing Kruk did get right tonight. He watched him. He's like, this just isn't fair. It's not fair when he can throw 101 at your head and then snap off a curveball at 84 and make it look like it's a strike and it tails outside and low. So those are the two guys that are extraordinary right now. And I don't know. Again, I'm not saying we can't make a nice run this year because we got a decent team. And if we get hot at the right time, it could happen. But right now on paper, what you're looking at is an ordinary baseball team. I don't know what their personality is. I don't know what their character is. I don't care what happens. Somebody's got to start. Even if it's a stupid, you know, water cooler stuff or the pies in the face, whatever it is. I'm telling you right now, this team needs something. And it's not necessarily just on the field stuff. It's in general. All right, what else we got here that I wanted to talk to you guys about? Kruk's a dummy. Jeter doesn't hustle. Phelps doesn't bend. That's pretty much it. So I guess we covered most of what I wanted to talk about today. Good win, I'll say that. It's always good going to Fenway, taking 2 out of 3. Looking forward to the Tigers. Again, watch for Jeter. I would not be surprised if Jeter sits out tomorrow. There was no report on any injuries yet as of this podcast, but he did not look comfortable in the one time where he had to hustle to beat out that double play. Or that single, that infield hit. So that's basically it. One thing I did want to do is have a segment for each podcast, as dumb as this may sound. Top five off the top. I wanted to kind of rank maybe 5 things, whether it's Yankee-related, whether it's baseball-related. First thing I thought of this week is pop music, rock and roll, pop music, songs you hear on the radio, top 5 baseball songs. And going from 5 to number 1, what I think is 5 is Walk of Life by Dire Straits. Number 4, I Love L.A. by Randy Newman. I like that one because he went a Naked Gun. They just played that Naked Gun. It just reminds me of that old, you know, those just 80s baseball. You know what I mean? Just with the chewing tobacco and the bullpen cars and the wacky personalities. And, you know, and then they had that song playing while they did a little in-game montage before Reggie Jackson becomes a robot and is going to take out the Queen. Which is ridiculous to even say, but that movie was hysterical. Glory Days, I don't know. That was just a song that was around when I was playing, when I was pitching, playing, you know, high school. I always kind of had that on, and we always seemed to have that on before the games. And, you know, Glory Days from Bruce Springsteen, just a song that was big and played while I was kind of in my golden era of playing and watching baseball. An obvious one, number 2, Put Me in Coach. I'm ready to play center field. Similar, a little more direct, a little more of a literal baseball song, but a great song nonetheless, and definitely one of my favorites. And my number 1 baseball song overall is by the chairman of the board, Frank Sinatra, New York, New York, because nowadays it's win or lose, but after every Yankee game, you know the deal. I know some people are going to be mad because I didn't put Empire State of Mind in there by Jay-Z, but that kind of got annoying after a while. Especially remember in the parade, when they had the parade and they played it and Jay-Z actually did it live on the stage. And basically you have a handful of Yankees that are actually of that age and in the mix of like kind of liking that kind of music, go out to the clubs or whatever. But then most of it was all executives and broadcasters and like older guys on the team and elder statesmen who really didn't know what to do. You can kind of tell they wanted to bob their head a little bit because, the younger guys were, and it's kind of like what you're supposed to do in the moment. But, Randy Levine up there and John Sterling trying to dance to Jay-Z on the stage after the parade, that would have been a tough sell. So it was just a very awkward moment. It was funny though, but great song. That was a great, great time. Our last World Series as of now, 2009. Just think back. We want to compare teams and how you're not ready to win this year. Think about those teams. You had, Jeter basically in his prime. You had A-Rod killing it. You had Teixeira in his prime. You had CeCe mowing people down. These are extraordinary players. Again, right now, we're dealing with a lot of ordinary stuff. But it doesn't mean you can't come together and put together an extraordinary effort with a bunch of ordinary players. And I'm definitely hoping for the best. Thank you guys for listening. Please, now we're on iTunes, as you know. Tell your friends, please subscribe to the podcast. Hopefully, this was a little bit more listenable than the last one. And hopefully, the next one will be a little bit more listenable than this one. Each week, just looking to get better. Very, very shortly, I'll be looking into the ways to make it interactive. I'd love to be able to get more feedback from you guys, to be able to read it on the air, have some fun with that. You guys make fun of me. I'll make fun of you back. We'll have a good time with it. But like I said, the reason I'm doing this, half the reason is because I like to hear myself talk, but the other half is because I like podcasts and I listen to a lot of comedy podcasts and stuff like that. I was like, I'd love to hear just like a, some sort of a Yankee kind of opinionated podcast looked out there. I don't know, maybe they're out there, but I didn't see them when I did a search. So this is one, Yankees and Gravy, episode 2. That's a wrap. See you next time.